Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, where we discuss all sorts of things Germanic heathenry related. My name is Jesse. I am your host. Let's get into it.
Gjallveitir Workshop is dedicated to the old ways, offering a wide selection of animist ritual supplies, divination tools, altar goods, and home decor, including premium reindeer hides imported from traditional herders in northern Finland. Whether you're just starting your spiritual journey or looking to expand your collection with a custom drum, we have everything you need. Visit our online store at gjallveitir.com and discover the beauty of mountain spirit.
All right, folks, welcome back to this week's episode of the podcast. This will be a fun one. I've been looking forward to this particular episode with my guest this week for quite some time. He is a return guest and is a wealth of knowledge and information when it comes to old ways Saxon heathenry. He is a Reconstructionist heathen trying to observe the ways of his Germanic ancestors as true and as close to the ways that they may have observed them as possible. He has a blog site called aldsadu.com. He also has a Facebook group called Aldsadu Saxon Heathenry. He also has a Facebook page called Germanic Heathenry, and all of that information is going to be linked in the show notes of the podcast, as well as the video description for all of you folks watching here on Patreon. Do want to give a very special shout out to all of my existing and return patrons here on Patreon. Thank you for pledging your support at whatever tier is possible. And a very special thank you to my Jarls, Chieftain, and Aesir, and Skald. Excuse me, Skald in between there. So we've got our Carls, Jarls, Chieftains, Skalds, and Aesir tier patrons. Everybody that has decided they want to support what I do here in the video version, thank you so very much for your support. Don't forget this week, if you are a Skald tier or above patron here on Patreon, that this week, which is going to be this Thursday, if I'm correct, I think I am. Let me just look at my calendar, make sure. I've been known to screw things up. Yes, it is the third Thursday of the month. So we are definitely going to be doing our monthly one-on-one virtual thing. So be on the lookout for that in your email boxes. If you're interested and you haven't heard about what that is, it's a once a month, promise I'll be okay to speak today, virtual one-on-one session for about an hour where you can ask me questions, kind of pick my brain about things. We get a chance to, talk more directly to one another versus like on a live stream where it's a bunch of people talking or commenting and me keeping up with that. So that is the third Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. Central Time. So this week will be that. So if you're listening to this on the audio waves, it's today. If you're watching this on Patreon, it's today. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing those of you who have pledged your support at that tier to come and join me for about an hour to chat. But anyways, Robert Sass is my guest this week. I've been talking about his sites, but I don't think I dropped the name. But Robert Sass, who again authors blog articles on his aldsadu.com website. We're going to be talking today about the history of the heathen all thing assembly. At least what information we have available to us so far as what Robert and others have found. And if it has its place in modern times, if we can take what we know about this gathering, this assembly of various heathen groups, tribes, etc., from histories in the past, and either reconstruct or kind of revitalize this in a modern construct, have it be something that fits into the modern heathen construct of things. I have opinions about it. I hope that Robert will as well. I'm sure he does. So I'm excited to get into talking about this. I know it's been a topic that has come up in various conversations, not just with myself and other people in my area, but it has been something that occasionally pops up in a message that I get from somebody or I see online. So I'm really excited to learn more about the all thing or the Saxon thing. So as it's called, we're going to hear about more about that from Robert today. So you guys be sure to check out everything in the description of the video or the show notes of the podcast for all of Robert's stuff, his website, his Facebook group, and the Facebook page, Germanic Heathenry. All of it's going to be linked down there. Show him support where you can. You'll learn a lot. I do too. he posts regularly on his website. So he does post regular articles. And you can even sign up to get like email notifications. It's pretty cool. So anyway, be sure to check all that out. And as always, check out the stuff that you see about Midgard Musings, the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, everything in the Linktree link that's linked down there, all the ways that you can support me, follow me on all the socials. There's merchandise through Spring that you can buy, the sales of which help support this podcast as well. Plus you get some, you know, neat threads to don and support the brand. So check all that out, and I hope you guys enjoy the show. If you do, be sure to share it around, tell your friends. Yeah, spread the word. So without further ado, let's go ahead and welcome in Robert Sass of Altitude.com, Germanic Heathenry on Facebook, and the Altitude Saxon Heathenry group on Facebook as well. All right, everybody. We are joined here with return guest Robert Sass of Altsadu.com, the Germanic Heathenry Facebook page, and the Altsadu Saxon Heathenry Facebook group. Welcome back to the show, Robert.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. I'm trying to recall the last, it's been a couple of years, a couple of seasons ago, I think, that you were back on here. And I know a lot for both of us has changed, you know, and you never know where people are to want to appear for stuff like, you know, podcasts and whatnot. So it's great that you're accessible still and willing to come on here and talk about some stuff that people are talking about here. I noticed recently, I don't know if you've seen or heard talk, but I've had people come to me and ask about this topic that we're talking about today, which is heathen thing, all thing. I think there's another English word for it that Witten. I can't remember. Witten, thank you. Yes.
Witten Gemote, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's gonna be great. You've done some work on your Altsadu site. But before we get into the topic of discussion, is there anything that you'd like to kind of just introduce the people with for those folks who are new to you or new to the show that don't know what Altsadu is and what that means and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, I would say Altsadu sort of had a reboot. I mean, I've certainly had a reboot with my local community. And what I mean by that is, you know, we want to have honorable people around us. There's a lot of poor behavior online, and I'm not going to mention any names or that. I'm just saying, you know, we all have enough drama in our lives. And if we want to get online and social media and learn heathenry, we'd like to do it in a pleasurable environment. And the same is true with people you bring into your home and that you do ritual with. So, you know, I think we've had three reboots in our local community in the Chicago area. And I think I also stepped back from social media in the sense, you know, I'm back to blogging like I was before, but I've done a lot less videos. I will eventually get back to that. I think I needed some time away to kind of redirection myself, to recharge, and as I've learned more and more about Altsadu, the ways of the old Saxons, and more about the pre-Christian Germanic heathens, you know, you're always trying to learn and to grow and to get their worldview and mindset. So that's why a lot of people probably see me less on Altsadu groups because, you know, I'm spending all my time on Altsadu and Germanic heathenry groups. So, but yeah, Altsadu is a word that just means old, old, sadu, meaning customs. If you've heard the Scandinavian phrase, foreign said, that would be ancient customs. So said, S-E-D is how you'd spell it. Foreign meaning previous, ancient. Old is just a word that means old. So it's very similar concept to, you know, a lot of the terms the Swedish heathens use, foreign said. Okay. You know, so that's really what the term means and what it's about.
Right. Yeah, you know, I see the term old ways get used quite a bit, especially in the Norse or Asatru circles, right? I even have it as the sort of mantra of the channel, right? Practicing old ways in modern times. And do you think that old ways as a term is largely misunderstood nowadays or misused or you know, how old are we really talking? You know, like, yeah, sure, old could be a couple hundred years ago or 80 years ago or 1,000 years ago, you know? So what do you think about the term old ways and how it gets represented in at large by, you know, the heathen community that we are kind of, that we have vision of or that we know of?
Well, to me, old ways means pre-Christian heathen ways, before our ancestors were either forcefully or by choice became Christians. I do think that the phrase is misunderstood. I mean, like anything, like if you want to learn about electric cars versus non-electric cars, internal combustion engine cars, you're going to get a ton of misinformation. The same thing is true if you go on a lot of religious sites today. I mean, information, most people that are looking for quick answers can very easily be convinced that something is old and pre-Christian when it's post-Christian. So right. I think people, like any subject that they study, it's not just an Asatru problem. It can be in any subject. With our social media, anyone can post anything up online and make any claim. There's no penalty in America with free speech for throwing completely false information up. So to me, I think people could define old ways differently. I mean, some people may say, I like ways that's even post-Christian that might have Christian influences because my family heritage did keep that at one time. And I understand that. But Old Sadhu was really looking at, I would say, just a couple things. So here's one thing that I've changed in the last 2 years. I very much think now, had heathenry survived until today, what would it be? I do not think that they would have changed the dating of the holidays, nor do I think they would have changed symbol. I think they probably wouldn't slaughter their animals and throw the blood from the slaughtered animals on rocks in their backyard. I think they would literally go to the store and buy their food. I mean, nowadays, most of us don't slaughter food anymore. So I guess the point that I'm saying is wearing historically accurate heathen clothing is not as important to me anymore. I'm not saying that I don't have period correct clothing, and I'm not saying that I don't find wearing period garb enjoyable. But to me, the old ways is about what were the holy days? How were they celebrated? When were they? What was Bloden symbol? How were they celebrated in sacred groves, in wine halls, mead halls? And, you know, to me, that's what the old ways are in pre-Christian times.
Yeah. I would echo that. It's like, it's funny because I get a lot of people trying to scold me for having this Vegas here behind me going, well, that's not old. I'm like, yeah, I know it's not. The reason it's up here is not because I adhere to the Solomonic or whatever, you know, Kabbalism stuff that the symbol got associated with later on. It's modern in consideration of, you know, like you say, pre-Christian, Germanic or even Scandinavian heathen beliefs. But it was a gift, you know, and it was a gift from a friend who supports what I do. And so the gesture, the gift means more to me than what the symbol does. So for that reason is why it's up here and why it stays here, you know? And so I think when we look at some of the worldviews, the ways that, you know, pre-Christian Germanic people viewed the world, right? The gifting cycle was a big part of their culture. And that's one of the things that I've come to learn over the years is it's not really so much what, you know, what the thing is the gesture of the gift, right? It doesn't have to be big, doesn't have to be period correct or whatever, you know, but it was just the spirit of the gift and the meaning behind it is more important to me than what it actually is.
Do you see the flag behind me that I'm trying to show?
Yeah, the steed or the stallion or the is that a Saxon steed, I think, is it?
What is yeah, it? So long story short, the first historical reference we have of the Saxon steed is in Der Sassen Chronicle from the year 1492. So the Saxon steed does not go back to heathen times. And sadly, around the 15th century, a Christian legend arose about the most famous Saxon heathen, Wittekind, who fought against the Christians to keep Saxony heathen. Oh, yeah. And the Christians didn't really like the historical heathen Wittekind, so they created this legend that he rode a black horse when he was a heathen, and once he was baptized forcefully, he then rode a white horse. Oh, so wow. All the horse symbols in northern Germany are coming from this legend. And like your friend gave that to you, archaeologist Sven Nipschild gave that to me in the historical site of the Irminsul, where the Irminsul is in Obermarsberg, or Irminsul was. And he gave this to me. And even though it comes from the 16th century and later, 15th century and later, it means a lot to me.
Yeah.
It's not historical, but it is an old way. So if you're saying define old, it depends who you're talking. You have Elder Futhark runes on your banner behind you as well. I mean, right. That's heathen period. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, how granular do we want to get about things, you know? But to me, it's, again, it's the gesture and it's kind of just been the staple, you know? So, but yeah, man, so you are, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you would be considered a reconstructionist, historical reconstructionist heathen, right? You lean heavily into the, what do we know of the ways that pre-Christian Scandinavians or Germanic people did their things, right? What can we find? What can we unearth? What can we discover? And then how do we reconstruct that into modern times?
Exactly.
So the topic of today's podcast is thing, all thing, Witten. You mentioned with Wittenmote. What is thing? I'm going to turn it over to you to explain to the people what the Saxon thing was, what the Norse all thing was, or the English Wittenmote. So would you mind explaining for people what we're talking about when we're saying these things?
So let me first start with the term all thing. The Saxons had things, but they also had all thing. So their all thing was an annual thing, which I believe was done at the exact same time that the Swedes did their disting. Disting means deseer thing, or a thing of the deseer. You know, and the full moon that's coming up in the next week, I believe that's when the Saxons did it once a year, one full moon before Sigurbloat. And what happened in Saxony, according to a 9th century source, which is a pretty early source. I mean, the Saxons, there were many of them still heathen at the time, sure. Forceful Christianization was going on. But what happened was, is the Saxons were divided into about 100 districts in northern Germany, and they each sent representatives from the three classes. You know, if you understand, say, the Eddas, Heimdall was responsible for the three classes for the Scandinavians. We assume he may be for the Saxons as well, but each of the three classes had equal representation at all thing. And the thing would decide if the nation or the tribal confederation would be going to war or be at peace that year. And they would make decisions. And what the writings of Saint Lebuin wrote was that they would be in a circle. All the classes would be represented. They would first offer up prayers to the gods and goddesses, which I would not disbelieve that source, that they began with that. And they also practiced forms of future telling. The Saint Lebuin doesn't mention, you know, auspices, you know, bird signs, or say runic type divination. You know, he doesn't mention that, but it the source does imply that that sort of thing, at least seeking people that could predict the future, vulvas, as you would, would be involved, and that the tribe would make decisions together as kind of like a representative republic. So that was the Saxon way of doing it. The Saxons were a little different from other Germanic tribes. They did not have kings. Now, in fairness, let me define the word king. It comes from the noun kuni, which means a clan. So really, a heathen understanding of a king is a clan leader. And later, that word switched to the Christian understanding, which is a king appointed by the Almighty God to be the dictator or the Führer of people over an empire. I don't believe heathen society was originally that way. You know, even Harald Fairhair, the first king of all Norway, that's a later development, probably influenced by Christianity and that type of Roman consolidation of power. I think I diverged a bit, though. For the Saxons, their republic was their government, so to speak. And they no doubt had local things, but the all thing was a big deal. You know, they had a neighbor, the Franks, who wanted to Christianize them. And it probably was a big deal one full moon before Sigerbloat, the bloat where you bloat for victory in war, which is the war season at that time is the summer, the 6 or 7 months of summer. So it makes sense to me that that's when they would hold thing when, you know, it's starting to get warm and summer, because they had two seasons, is around the corner. Yeah. And it was a big deal. You know, should we be preparing ourselves to defend, or should we go on the offensive, especially with forced Christianization? So, and obviously they also handled some legal matters, but I really think legal matters for individuals was not done in an all thing. That's your local thing for your Drotan of your local Gau would be your old Saxon word. I think the old old Anglo equivalent in England for those, the English, old English heathens would be Shire. They had their local things, and they certainly had that more often than once a year. So, you know, that's your all thing, at least in Saxony. You know, the Icelanders are famous for having an all thing as well.
Well, they still do it, right?
Yes.
Their parliament.
Well versed in Icelandic, but I have read the Gragas and Icelandic sources, so I do know some, but I don't feel like I'm an expert in Icelandic ways. It's not my I'm an American, but my ancestors, my grandpa, my grandma, that generation moved here. They were born in Germany. They moved here. So that's what I know. I know that a bit better. But yes, Althing, I think, is even the name of modern Iceland's parliament.
Right.
So, right. You know, I think they had Althing too, but I think it was not at the same time as Disting. I think the sources say it was in the summer. But I think they did certainly have Althing. The things that I'm used to leading, I've led about a dozen to 15 things. I guess I'd have to try to to count. But, you know, our local community used to do it 5 times a year. We've kind of, now we almost do it when we think we need to. But, you know, I've been a part of some pretty intense things.
So the small things, you know, we say things with a small T, but but it is a thing, capital T. It's a gathering. It's an assembly with a specific purpose. It isn't, at least I don't think we could deduce, right? It wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't the same as a holy day, like a bloat day. At least not that I understand, right? It was for something very specific. Possibly, you know, legal proceedings, or hey, you know, Wilhelm stole my sheep, and now he's not wanting to, you know, pay restitution. We gotta either I go to war with him and his family, or we settle this some other way, and that something like that may have been taken to thing, right?
Yes. So I'm even gonna pull up kind of all my notes on thing. But let me tell you first how things started with us, my local community. It first began where at Sumble, if someone made an oath at Sumble, it's a big deal. You know, you have your oath staff that oaths are supposed to be sworn on, or rings. You might have an arm ring or a ring on a sword. There are other things that you can swear on, but we had a situation where someone made a major oath. Our Thule approved that, and we felt that he could easily attain this oath, and he blew it off. And we felt that that would affect our Megan or our might of the entire group. I guess some heathens might use the term luck. I look at luck as a little bit more of a modern word, but maybe you can say the same concept. And yeah, we wanted to decide as a group how we would handle this. And the individual actually stopped coming. So on the one hand, it did make us life easy on us, but we also felt that we owed the gods and goddesses shield, payment for that failed oath. So even though we ourselves didn't make it, our Thule approved it. We all toasted to it. We encouraged this person to keep it, and we wanted to keep in right standing before the gods. So we called a thing to handle it. And after that, oh, wow, we started using things to make our rules. Like, you know, I'm kind of chuckling because, you know, there's this list floating around that I'm supposedly a misogynist, and I bring it up because I made a post on that, and where I got misquoted, I was talking about, you know, we have to protect our women, because what happened is someone broke, they broke trust kind of with us. They came, it was the first time we saw them in person, and they came with guns just hanging out. And
what is this, right? An OK Corral or something? Like,
yeah, well, no, they came into our home, like, because, oh, wow, you know, I hosted ritual, so, you know, we had some members who were single moms, and, you know, if we had a gun incident, you know, it goes off accidentally, somebody gets hurt. Oof. You know, women were really afraid of what that could do to their custody and their control over their children. Sure. And of course they were afraid for the safety of their children.
Rightly so.
You know, I made a post on that. I think I was misunderstood. They thought that I was implying that women can't protect themselves. But listen, as a husband, I want my wife to feel safe. I want her to feel that she knows that I'm going to protect her. I don't think that that is a misogynist attitude at all. But we had to have a thing about that because we actually decided in thing that we needed to meet people face to face before I just invited them to our house for ritual. Mm. I mean, it may sound like very basic and simple stuff, but when you actually put together a local community and you lead it, you find sometimes you're going to have basic problems that you didn't really think of. I mean, maybe it's my Christian past where, you know, the last time I attended church, I think it was in my young 20s. But, you know, you don't assume people are going to come bearing huge arms that everyone can see, you know, with guns. You just don't assume that.
Right.
I never Not thought the that they'd come into their house with guns on their hips, you know,
like, what the heck is the why? Like, what, you know, so what if the law says I can, but like, what is that? Yeah, what's the why would you do that? Why would you just walk into somebody's home sporting your, you know, side piece there or sidearm? And what is that? You know, it sounds like the it sounds like what you guys, what you're calling a thing, like when you say, you know, we call a thing for this or that, that they are, they're not like. To me, what it sounds like is it's not like a set in stone calendar date, like we're going to do thing on these set specific days. When the occasion or when the need calls for it, then the people in the position of leadership will call it. And those people that are part of the group are expected to represent or have representation or something. Is that an accurate? Am I seeing things kind of accurately with that, or?
I think you're partially right. Like, we try to be as old ways as we can. And Tacitus, for example, in the late first century, early second century, said that the Germanic tribes have their meetings on new and full moons, because that's when they consider it the luckiest time to conduct their business. That's how we look at it as well. I understand that Tacitus is long before, say, the Eddas and Snorri. Snorri is responsible for one Edda, but, you know, I still think Tacitus is a good source because he wasn't a Christian. He was a Roman pagan.
Right.
So I value Tacitus, and I don't think that he had any reason to lie. He wasn't like, these heathens are wrong because they didn't choose Roman gods. You know, they didn't have a monotheistic mindset. So, you know, we did try to do that, and we typically teamed it up with ritual. I mean, outside of once a year, we got together to just do thing. And then afterwards we typically did a symbol, but most of the time when we hold our things, at least now, thing, loat, symbol, you know, back to back to back.
Right. And does, so, you know, it's interesting to hear the historical, definitions of thing. You know, there was representation of all the classes, you know, so you had your, at that time, at least there were your, upper class, the, if you want to say nobility, you had your middle class, and then you had your thralls, the slave, you know, everybody had representation at thing back then. It's different now, you know? Yeah, sure, there's different classes of society, but like when we talk about, you know, modern heathenry, it's, you know, if a group were to call thing, or let's say we want to go and look at an all thing, where a region of a country or a region of yeah, like we're both in the United States, right? So let's just keep it relevant to our area, right? If a Mid-South all thing, or Midwest all thing, or Northwest all thing were called, it's like everybody in that region, wherever your district, whatever your district kind of consists of, right? If you're part of the Midwest area, or you're part of the Mid-South area, and all thing is called, then representatives of the heathen communities would come to that here, at least in modern times. Sorry, we're not going to necessarily get as granular as, well, man, you know, I need a representative of the up, you know, the upper class, a representative of the middle class, a representative of the bums. I don't know, like, that's a harsh way of saying it, but you know I'm trying to say, like, it would be a little bit different now because society's not the same as it was back then, right?
Well, and I would say for two things, because one, like in our thing, like, follow my logic for a moment. In our things, we elect our law speaker, who is permanently our law speaker. Okay, we have that position. We elect people to certain positions. So this is how we also govern ourselves. So even though I'm the founder, the whole group can boot me. So at least in Old Saxony, that didn't have all-powerful dictator-type kings, yeah. I can't be a ruthless person over my people. And the reason why I'm answering your question, like regional all things, look, my local community isn't going to be able to, if we have an all thing with many other groups, our law speaker may mean nothing to another group, you know, like,
sure.
When I have done joint groups with a group in Wisconsin and a group in Chicago, where we did a ritual up in Wisconsin with them. And some of them, not all of them, did come down for a ritual with us in our area. And I will say, you know, I don't think either of our groups tried to exercise power or believe that our all thing should, you know, any decisions would apply to their groups, because I've never had an all thing. I've never led or been a part of an all thing like that. So I tend to wonder, because, you know, heathens online, I understand that we're not monotheists, so we all don't have to absolutely have absolute agreement and be absolutely the same, like cookie cutter churches. Yeah. But typically, you know, I look at heathens, like if you have 50 heathen leaders who have founded a local community, you're going to have 61 different opinions on one thing. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Yeah. So like it was, you know, one of the things I posted something about this on the Midgard Musings Facebook page in anticipation of our meeting, right? Of our podcast. And I was like, you know, I'm going to have Robert Sass on here. We're going to talk about all thing. And a lot of people are like, I think there should be one. And then it kind of goes back to, at least in my opinion, it kind of goes back to the understanding of what we're talking about. Like I was saying before, how the term old ways gets misused or misunderstood. What are we talking about when we say, does modern heathenry need an all thing? Some people were saying yes, because of the reason that there are a lot of folks online, whether they're representatives of a national organization or of a 501(c), whatever the thing, you know, is, a nonprofit, that are publishing or saying certain things about heathenry and kind of being a voice for the community. And it's like, well, maybe we don't see things that way. Like, why are you trying to lump us all into that way of thinking? And I think what some people are, or at least one person was saying, was something along the lines of, well, if there was an all thing called, then it would allow for representation and we could come together and have this sense of community that we're looking for, and talk about these things that get either misrepresented or misconstrued because it's just being put on a platform where nobody can weigh in on it. You know what I mean?
I think so. I almost think that, like, maybe, and I'm outside of Asatru now, so if I say names of groups that no longer exist, like the Troth or the AFA or TAC or the Noriana Society, some of these groups that are more organized, they could probably have an all thing with ease. I almost think you'd have to have strong enough interpersonal relationships with other heathens if you're not a part of some national type organization.
Yeah.
To say that the things that we decide at thing matter. I mean, for Al Tzedu, in fairness, if I find out that there is someone doing an Al Tzedu group like mine in Indiana, if they accept the Al Tzedu mission statement, which is pretty generic, it's no racism, no bigotry of any type. These are the five things that I mentioned before we're trying to reconstruct, you know, holy day, symbol, bloat. If they agreed with the basic premises, then sure, maybe we could make decisions because we're all going to agree on them together and it would be authoritative. I think some heathens are right that maybe we should come together more. We should be a little more organized, and others are, whoa, like, let's not be like a church. But at the same point in time, one could argue, since there's so few of us, if we don't band together, you know, can we really start having more common customs? You know, for us Al Tzedu guys, you know, I know that they're doing three major bloats a year, and I know what dates and times they're doing. I would actually like to be in contact and in solidarity with them because we see eye to eye, and we want our faith to have a positive, you know, like if someone were to Google the term Al Tzedu, are they going to see discussions on bigotry, or are they going to see like these guys are really honorable and they make a difference in the world type discussions? I mean,
yeah,
that's what I really want. Like, you know, I guess I'm going to say one thing about things. You know, people know me as the guy that pushes the historical accuracy of holidays. But in the last 2 years, I would say there's something more important than that. It's honor. Are we living pre-Christian heathen virtues of honor? Do we uphold proper heathen morality? And are we, you know, as upright as we can possibly be in front of the world? Like, I don't want to throw Scientology under the bus, but I think we all agree when people think of Scientology, they think of stuff they've seen on TV about how abusive they are and their scandals. We want our reputation to the world to be spotless. And in order to do that, an all thing would be a great idea to say, we're against these forms of bigotry, or we're against this, or, you know, we need to make sure that we have proper standards, even honor. Mm-hmm. And if someone's behaving dishonorably, you know, I understand it's not our job like Christians. We're a different religion, but it's always nice to make people better because that's what leadership is. It's building people. If someone makes a mistake, can they pay their shield and be
restore their honor?
Yeah. Can we give them a chance? Or is it so egregious that it's like a form of outlawry?
Yeah.
I mean, things should decide that. And that's why these things are important.
Mm. Now, those are good those are good things to mention. I've had, so I've done a couple of, and it wasn't just me. I've co-hosted a number of park moots, which I guess if you want to look at the construct of it, is a form of a thing. I mean, it is an assembly, right? But it's not like come or not come. It's if you want to come. But the thing about our park moots here in this area is that it's an amalgamation of different religious bodies. So you've got a lot of folks that lean towards the Norse or Germanic side of things when it comes to their paganism. And then there are folks that are not that. They're more eclectic. They're more Wiccan. You know, so in this area of Middle Tennessee where I live, it's a melting pot of non-traditional religious views, which is strange to say considering Tennessee being kind of like part of the what they consider the Bible Belt. But there are a lot of non-traditional and the non-traditional religious types. But those assemblies, those park moots, you know, one of the things that came up, I remember at one of these gatherings, it was either a moot or it was another kin, like there's a Raven Moon Hearth is one of the bigger area in the Nashville area, one of the bigger Norse pagan groups. They do stuff public throughout the year, and I think it may have been there or it was a park moot that I helped co-host. But anyway, one person was asking about stuff like you were talking about, like, you know, what if somebody does something, you know, what do you do about that? That if they did something that was against the custom or the thew of the group, the tribe, you know, how do you handle that? And we talked about that. It was like, well, I mean, obviously there's going to be some things that, you know, if it was illegal by common law, right, by whether it was state, federal law, I mean, that's that. But if it's kind of a thew or a custom that was broken of the small unit of that tribe, well, we're going to look to see, all right, well, what was the nature of the offense? Most of the time, I think we can come up with some sort of shield, recompense, to balance out, right? You can restore your honor now because what you did was dishonorable. What you did was a damage to your honor. It was a hit to the Frith, perhaps. You know, a Frith was damaged, maybe trust was broken, something like that. Well, what do you do to restore that honor? And then what happens if the thing was so egregious that you're outlawed? And it got to the, like, we reached the point of the discussion where it was like it lands on how that tribe does things. It's their decision. They would call an assembly. They would meet. They would get their officials together. They would decide, well, what needs to be done to set the balance back in order. And if shield could be paid and you know, the honor could be restored, then great. And if not, if it was such an egregious thing, you're like, there is no recompense. There is no shield that you could pay. You're out. Go. Be gone. You know, you're kneeling now. It's you know, kind of one of those things.
So. You know, I'm going to bring up a weird story about us. I mean, it's a true story. And because it's like 7-8 years ago now, I think it's okay to share this. Someone attacked me online and said some very negative things. And one of the members of our local community literally got a box of dildos, put them in the mail, found the person's address and insulted me, and sent them a box of dildos. Now, we found out about this because the person received the box, complained, suddenly my name's getting thrown. And I had no idea they were doing this. I had nothing to do with their decision.
Yeah.
And honestly, what was said about me was pretty egregious. But to be honest with you, you just have to get over some things. I mean, because right. it hurt our reputation, we had a thing about it. We had a trial. And the person was removed from us for 1 year. And I know that the person who received the box of dildos felt it should have been a lifelong ban, but yet she lived in a different state and had some outrageously crazy and wrong things to say about me. And we don't try to exercise our authority over her. She wasn't a member.
Mm-hmm.
But we think that, again, how we behave affects our reputation. You know, I know police reports were filed. You know, she was offended that someone tracked her down. And sure. if you get to the point where someone in your local community is causing police reports to be written by another heathen, no matter how they behave online, you've got to put a stop to it. You have to distance yourself from that because there's nothing healthy about that. Right. Now, I'm proud that he, in a sense, spent his time away from the community and got his act together, and he became a very important member of our community again and stayed drama free after that. Mm-hmm. And I feel that because it was decided at our all thing with the assistance of the gods and our ancestors, you know, that that was the fate that the word shapers or the Norn ear, to use Scandinavian's terms, that was his fate, so to speak. That was what was measured to him. Mm-hmm. And he had that length of thread dealt to him, and he paid that price. And what we do at our thing, we feel was our business. And at least we did something.
Yeah.
It's like we ignored it and didn't take action. And we did lose some members for it because they didn't want this person to have a way back in. They wanted him gone forever.
Yeah. Like full-blown outlawry, like, so long, Charlie, kind of thing.
I always try to please as many people as you can, but when you're working as a community and it's not me running it, we have a law speaker. We have all our thials. The wolves are elected. You know, I was elected Drachten or leader, but that doesn't mean that I could exercise too much authority. I looked at the leader title as I was the admin. I'm the one that says, yeah. Hey, remember, we're supposed to have ritual on this date. You know, I paid for a lot of the food. I did all the hosting. So yeah. I get that I had that, but I wasn't leading bloat. Someone else, I'm not saying I'm a terrible Gothi, but we had two people that just blew me away. Like, they were definitely shaped by the Nornir to be a Gothi and a Githia, way yeah. better than me. I throw great symbols. I mean, we all have our strengths. We all have our weaknesses.
Right.
I believe that, you know, just because I'm not, I might be the leader, the founder, doesn't mean that I should be the priest all the time. I like that our group makes decisions together and that we honor the people who are worthy and have earned it. You know, I don't want to be priest if I haven't earned that right. You know?
Yeah.
Don't have so much.
Yeah, but so much of what you say echoes with kind of how our tribe does things in Middle Tennessee, you know. And when I say tribe, I mean, like, it's very small, like, count on one hand kind of thing, the amount of people. So it's if anything, it's more of a, yeah, it's a tribe because not everybody is related by blood. But there is definitely a sense of family. So there's this extension of the family unit that is how our tribal structure has organically become. But similarly to what you're saying, you know, the chieftain, the Gothi, the Thule we kind of use as interchange as sort of the law speaker. I mean, in our group, right? So he has the role and the responsibility of sort of like in Beowulf, you know, he's kind of like the right hand, the chieftain's right hand. He's there to make sure that thing is being done in accordance with the tribe's thu, and when oaths are sworn, he's the one to challenge them if they're cockamamie, whatever. Like, hey, what are you talking about over there? Like, challenge it. If you know, if a flighting comes up, he's kind of the one to, you know, make sure that things go the way they should be going. But like you were saying, like the chieftain, the drogtan, the whatever name you want to put to it, isn't this sort of authoritarian dictator of things. Our tribal structure is very consensus based. Yeah, sure, there is a role and a responsibility that that person needs to fulfill, but let's take it to the floor. Let's, you know, because ultimately, you know, without the people, those positions are nothing, right? You can't be Drolton, you can't be chieftain, you can't be this, you can't be that without the people there to entrust you with that. They see this in you. They see the strength in you to entrust you with this role, with this responsibility. So it's a position of service, more than anything. I think it's not like I'm going to sit back and let everybody do everything for me. I'm going to work harder for the people. I'm going to work the hardest to make sure that what these people entrust me with is being fulfilled. So like you were saying, you know, you try to please everybody, and that doesn't happen all the time. You know, sometimes you just got to be like, well, it is the way it is. We're making the decision. I feel it has to be made at times that is for the betterment of everybody, not for the betterment of one person. Because when you get to this stage of things where there's a lot of people involved and a lot of hearts and a lot of feelings and all that, it's, well, what's good for everybody? What's good for the collective? Somebody may not like it. One person may be pissed off, and that's okay. I mean, that's happens. But if it's a decision that is made to make for the betterment of everybody as a whole, we go with that, you know? And I like what you were saying too, like how your group has thing that you call on certain times and at certain, you know, whether it's the new moon or the full moon, or you know, you echo back to the Tacitus observation of when they did things. Similarly with us, you know, like we'll have regular council. We call it just council, but it sounds similar to what you're saying, right? We'll assemble, we'll talk, we'll address certain things, whether it's an upcoming bloat that we're doing or an adjustment to the bylaws or something, you know, like it's kind of a formal gathering. It's kind of a formal assembly. But it's done with the purpose of kind of fine tuning and polishing those edges and making sure that what we have as a tribe is, something that can continue. 'Cause I don't look at me as a chieftain of Hluridi folk or you as the founder, Drolton, whatever of your group. It's like, well, I'm not going to be here forever, right? The group is going to be a continuation of things. So we want to have things set in place that for the next iteration, the next Drolton, the next chieftain to take over, that they can and continue on in the way of the Hluridi folk or the way of the whoever it is, right? And that's why we do these things. That's why we have these council meetings or these things as you would have them for your group.
You know, you brought up the word council. There is an old Saxon word spelled R-A-D. I've always pronounced it Rod. I don't have a PhD in linguistics, so I don't know how good my pronunciation really is. But I bring it up because it's in the sources. It means a secret council. We all love the word thing, and we see it on TV shows, you know, at Vikings season 1, episode 1, for a lot of those Viking people that came into heathenry from watching that, it's the first thing they see. Okay. It's inside the chieftain's hall. They're making a vote on a murder, and they hear the word thing. We do not see the word rod, secret council, except for in the sources. And because we don't see it in the TV shows, maybe we haven't spent enough time digging into what that is, because the old Saxons absolutely had a rod, a secret council. And what were they doing in it? I'm sure they were handling the old Saxon would be thou or thou. They probably were tackling those issues. Mm-hmm. And I don't hear that term used very often today.
I hadn't heard that before you mentioned it, honestly. Of course, I'm not a linguist either. With at least with Old Saxon, I'm getting back into learning German, because that's where my mom and my dad's side both, right? My mother's mother was German. Her maiden name was von Melungsen. My dad's side of the family were Dutch. I actually traced a lot of my ancestry on my dad's side back to a gentleman. His name was Jakob, and he lived in like the Rhine, the lower Rhine area, back to the, and it was not very far back. I think the farthest back I was able to go was, I think maybe the 1600s. But yeah, no, I hadn't heard that term before. You said secret council, and it was rod, or I don't know.
There's also the word runa, which is related to the word rune. So runes are secret mysteries. Also the secret council, rune or runa, various spellings in Old Saxon. That's probably even more used in the sources than rod, thinking about it. What were those? Do we have enough information in our historical sources to understand what those really were? It would be a great topic of research. I guess I need a new blog article. So there we go.
Hey, I'll be definitely keen on seeing that. And I like that you mentioned the correlation, the cognition of these words, and that they are mysteries. It's, it's funny, like being a runer myself, right, somebody that has studied is continuing. Like I found myself early on in my heathenry, diving into runic divination, runic studies, which has become and evolved into learning the language surrounding the time periods when the runes were used, and so many other things. And it's more than just trying to, it's more than just looking at these symbols as divinatory tools. It's the mysteries surrounding them. Linguistically, etymologically, the divinatory aspect, there's so much around it all. And yeah, it's become a very in-depth part of my spirituality, and it trickles into some of the other things, right, with our tribe. You know, how that happens. Our tribal banner is runic in nature, but it's its own thing. It's the symbol for our tribe is not something that you could ever find in a book or see in a source. But I think that's part of tribal identity in modern times, is you uncover mysteries of these things and you apply it to what's going on now in our modern time. And so, like, I wonder how much of this desire for an all thing, where that desire is coming from. You know, are people wanting this to, again, have a way of, you know, being represented, having a voice that is centralized around actual heathens, where it's like, well, it's not just some, you know, faceless blog on a forum somewhere that's saying, this is how we all believe, because of whatever reason they want to say. It's actually getting people together and then having that ability to be represented, and speak for themselves or have a voice spoken for themselves in face-to-face grassroots sort of thing. You know, I never got a chance to go to it. You probably heard of it too, but you know what I'm talking about when I say lightning across the plains?
I think I've heard of it, but I never dug into it to understand. I think I've seen it in groups that I used to be in.
Yeah, it was years ago. It was before I got into heathenry myself, but it was a big gathering. I think it was in the Oklahoma or Kansas or somewhere up in that neck of the woods of the country in the United States. And I know some people that were a part of it, and it was a big thing. It was like an all thing at the time. You know, people would come from different areas all across, all around the country, and come to Lightning Across the Plains. And like, I remember hearing that they would elect officials for Lightning Across the Plains. It was like, so what if, you know, John over here in Kansas was, you know, law speaker for his tribe, and, you know, Timothy over in Oklahoma was law speaker for that tribe. Doesn't matter. When Lightning Across the Plains happened, it was voted upon who would be the law speaker. It might be John, it might be Tim, it might be Bob, it might be somebody else, but it was voted, and the law speaker for the thing was elected. It wasn't a law speaker for this tribe or that tribe that was there. It was an elected position, so far as I understand. And I wonder if that would be a model to look at for if a regional all thing were ever to be formulated, was that, you know, we might look at the chance of electing positions for that sort of assembly, make it sort of a that way there's no bias, you know what I mean? Like it's like, well, this person from this tribe is their law speaker, so, you know, he or she, whatever, they're going to be the ones that you know, there's bias because of who they're with. Like, no, it's a general assembly, and at the general assembly, at this collective, there's an unbiased position that's elected. It's just something to think about. I don't know.
You know, that's one of the things I love about Thing, that the way the model is set up, like, I'm going to use the Hebrew Bible example, and I know that it's not a relevant example for heathenry, but, like, you know, it does say that you need two or three witnesses at a minimum to carry out capital punishment. Thing, you need lots of people. I feel more safe. You know, they say that juries came from heathen things, the concept of many people. It's not two or three witnesses in America. It's 12. Right. You have a jury of 12.
And you probably are better versed in the sources, but an actual number, oh, it was 5 or 7 or 9 or whatever.
I can't remember that. I mean, I know at the Saxon All thing that they had 12 freemen, 12 noble, and 12 peasants.
From, so it was 12.
Macau, but I don't know. Yeah, that's an old Saxon number, but I don't think the old Saxon number, I don't know if that really played a part in jury. I could.
Well, there are 12 members of a jury today, at least in the United States justice system, you know, for trials and stuff. So maybe.
But it was 12 from each of the three classes. So you'd have 36 from each gal. But that was for all things.
Okay, I got you.
I probably have to do more research on that. I mean, I will say, though, like, there is some discussion, like, let's use the old English word witten. Mm-hmm. Does it mean men of wit, wise men, or does it come from the old English and old Saxon word that means a punishment? Because a wit or a witty in old Saxon is a punishment. So, you know, is it wise people that get put on a jury, or is it about wise people meting out punishments? Maybe it's a double meaning, because they'd be pronounced the same way.
Yeah.
Spelling to me is a little different because, you know, the heathens did not use the Latin alphabet until it came to them. And I'm not saying Latin didn't influence some runes in any way, but, you know, the Germanic languages was a runic language. We have a TH letter. You know, we spell words the way we do, like people, the word people, it's not spelled how it sounds. You know what I mean? And that's element, you know,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
Well, so much of, I think, the, like, when I hear people talk about all thing, right? Oh, yeah, we need one. I always go back to the why, right? Why do we want an all thing? And is this just another excuse or reason for a bunch of people to get together and have vendors and classes and stuff? Like, well, those things already exist. Like, there are plenty of public events that happen, at least here in the United States. I know I've got people that listen in other parts of the world and watch this that are not in our respective area. But those are their own things. I mean, we use the word thing to describe this legal assembly, but they are things in their own respective way. If it's a public event where, you know, everybody can come and have a good time and meet and network, that is a thing, right? It's an assembly. But I think if we're going to stay true to the term all thing, then are we obligated to look at what all thing was in arch-heathen times or in pre-Christian times and determine whether or not that framework applies to us in modern times? Is there this need or this sense of governance, or, and maybe that's a hard, like, maybe that's a heavy way of putting it, but you know what I'm trying to say, like what the purpose of all thing was at the time that it was happening and what it was for, does it meet with a need that is present now and today?
I guess, gosh, there's so many ways I can answer that.
It's a bit rhetorical, you know, but if you have an answer, yeah.
Yeah, if it's the Saxons, it was their tribal assembly.
Yeah.
Because they had to unite together to fight the Christian Franks.
And they had that back then, right? Right. There were Saxon, they were the tribe. What do we have nowadays? Well, we've got, it's different, you know, it's such a different time and a different construct.
I have this.
Sorry to cut you off, but.
No, it's totally okay. I have this odd belief too that kings turning in from the heathen clan leader to the Christian dictator type king did heathenry in, because the most famous Saxon rebel Widukind, who kept trying to fight wars to keep the Saxons heathen and free, he went to the Danes and said, "Look, you're next. If we fall, ally with us." CinemaSins, if you know that YouTube channel, CinemaSins, they'd say, yeah. I don't really like Star Wars because when it's 1-on-5, the hero fights each person one at a time and all five don't hit. The mm-hmm. Christians had some luck that the heathens were too reluctant to call things. So when you say, should we have an all thing? You know, I really believe historically, if the heathens formed a coalition, decided to put aside tribal differences, whatever differences the Danes and the Saxons had, they were good enough to, Widukind married the daughter of a Danish king, but yet the Danish king wouldn't use his armies to help defend Saxony with Widukind. So why? Like, if they were able to put aside their differences, would it have made a bigger difference? I honestly think, you know, historically, having that belief today, you know, I guess because I've seen so much online drama, I'm very slow to try to unite into larger than regional groups. But let's use another example. Let's use, well, I hesitate to use it. It's the first one that's coming to mind. You have the Universalists and your Focus. So when the Universalists decided to do Declaration 127, did they all hold a thing? Or was it one person's idea that caught on like wildfire? Because if it was done with a thing, imagine how powerful that would have been.
Oh, wow.
And did the AFA in their response decide to ignore it through an all thing of all the AFA? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because AFA did ignore it. That is a response. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was that McNallan driven, or did he hold an all thing? And was that their, you know, I think when you do things with a group and it's not coming a dictator pushing it down, and that it's decided at thing with prayer to the gods, offerings, and a community working together, there is so much power in that. You know, we get upset online quickly. We as in all of us. I mean, I can't say I behaved perfect online. I haven't. I've made mistakes.
Sure. Same.
Yeah. If we get involved in drama, if we were to handle it as a group, it would go so much better. But, you know, I think one way, I mean, I'm not shifting the discussion, but, you know, when people say Christianity has destroyed our world, I would say it's the outlook of it, because heathenry was family and community centered, and Christianity is about a personal relationship with Christ. Americans today, they don't have dinner as families anymore. I mean, we're a society that taps their foot by the microwave. We have no patience. I think that the Christian West made everything more individual. You can fix this alone in your personal walk with God. Whereas heathenry was not about, you know, you as a community approach the gods. You did symbol and bloat with your family. I'm not saying that you couldn't do it alone, but I mean, we have so many examples, especially of the Norwegians doing it as families.
Yeah.
That, you know, the idea of the Lone Ranger is a little bit, you know,
it's a bit far removed from the traditional model of that. One of the things that, interestingly enough, last week I was celebrating my 6 years of Midgard Musings, and I had a bunch of guys on a live stream, and this sort of topic came up in the sense of our roof trees, our hearth cults, or hearth culture. And one of the things that was identified and brought up was that, you know, one person can be there. That is a roof tree. Like, you can be one person, because, like, let's face it, like, not everybody has a family unit to connect with. There is a lot of estrangement that happens through various reasons in family units, and so a lot of people find themselves a bit of a solitary practitioner. Well, their solitary practice, that's their roof tree, you know. That's valid. There is something to be said for that. I think the more you lean into the old ways of heathenry, you're going to find that family doesn't always mean blood kin. There is fostering. There is ways to exist in the sib without being blood related. So there's that. But, you know, when we're talking about this, you know, I'm an island, and it's my personal relationship with the divine or whatever. Sure, I think even back in those days, just because we don't have it written down or documented, I'm sure that there were cases or you know, circumstances where, you know, a family, a person did something a certain way that wasn't the way that everybody else in that village or that gau or whatever did it. They had their own hearth culture surrounding a thing, right? They had their kof god, their hearth god, whatever that they would venerate or they would give to, feign to. That's going a little bit off topic of what we were talking about, but it was worth mentioning, I think, just because.
Well, if you don't mind me jumping in, you did use the word sib. An old Saxon sib is your word for those who married into the family. Like, the linguistic cognate would be Sif, Thor's wife.
Oh, yeah.
So she married into the family, and then they would have children. I mean, typically, you know, married couples have children. But that's where the word siblings come from.
Yeah.
You know, that's why... Charlemagne, who was a Christian, but when he conquered the Saxons, he demanded hostages. And who's the hostages? It's typically the nieces and the nephews of the people he's trying to, because it's the children of the sib. Mm. Those who married in. Who married your brother? Who did your sister marry? Let me grab their offspring, because I'm going to keep you in line, because the sib is important. And, you know, so... And we see in I call them Norwegian sagas, but like in Ynglinga saga and other sagas, you know, you see, I see it more with the Norwegians, because, you know, in a lot of the sagas, the Swedes are painted at Uppsala, you know, But the Norwegians are having Blåten Sundbol. You see, they're inviting their family, but it also says they're inviting their close friends.
Yeah.
So you have people who aren't a part of the SIB, but they're close. And that's why I think Asa True is forming kindreds. The word kin means offspring or family. Excuse me. The word kin means family, and kind means offspring of the family. Mm-hmm. And we're forming kindreds because we don't want to be alone. I mean, I do have a heathen wife and I do have heathen children. And my eldest son, his fiance joins us, and she's totally on board with all of it. So I have that, but you know, you ask your solitary practitioners, do they want five or more heathens that share the same belief system in the area? They would all say yes.
Yep. Oh yeah, man. I got, you know, we have a Facebook group in Middle Tennessee called Middle Tennessee Heathens. And one of the, you know, to try to regulate and vet people to keep down like spammer bots and all that garbage from joining a group. You know, one of the questions that is asked before you join the group is, you know, are you part of a kindred or tribe, or are you looking for one? And a lot of the membership that comes through on that Facebook group is, I'm not a part of one, I'm looking for something. So I see it, at least in our area, and I gotta think that it's not isolated to just us. You know, there's plenty of people that are looking for their quote unquote heathen home. You know, where are the people that think like me, at least close enough, that share in a similar worldview that I can grow with and cultivate a life with and having these meaningful experiences? Because that's where it's at. It's not online. You're not gonna experience things like Frith. You can't do things like Sumble, you know, over a keyboard long distance. It's, you got to have that grassroots interpersonal relationships.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, I've heard through the grapevine, I don't know if mosques do this, but I've heard that, you know, not Orthodox synagogues, where they do services on Zoom. I think I've heard churches doing services on Zoom. It's very hard to do a Sumble on Zoom. You know,
I don't think you could call it Sumble over that way. You know what I mean? Like, how do you, sure, everybody might be inside, but I don't, there's such a disconnect with that. Like, the gesture is, I guess, nice. It's well thought out. It's, you know, the meaning behind it is probably virtuous. But in reality, like, I had our last Yule here. We do Sumble, and it was the most intense Sumble I've ever held in our hall. Like, people cried out of happiness, out of sorrow. There was just this sharing of emotion between the participants of Sumble that I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't think I could replicate this over a Zoom call or over a long distance video call. Like, there's something about that, sharing that space with people and having those moments together, that you can't replicate it fully over long distance, you know?
Yeah, our sacred grove veneration, you can't do outdoor sacred grove at all. I mean, someone's going to be after carrying their phone or something. I mean,
I don't know about you, but I know a lot of folks that, ourselves included, but I know a lot of folks that prohibit the use of electronics or the presence of electronics when ritual is held. They don't want that window of the outside interfering with the inner.
We have it too, but for the safety of our members. I mean, I hate to say this, but like, some people, like, you know, my family can't know I'm heathen. My ex can't know I'm heathen. I could be in trouble in court with my kids. I mean, I hate to say it, but you almost have to have that secret council. It's the healthiest way to go about. Like, the new iteration of our Chicago area community, we're unbelievably secretive. There would be no picture taking. We don't want that to affect us, and we don't want it to be used against us, especially if someone later gets pissed off and hates all of us. They could share all sorts of stuff. We live in such a rough world, man, and I hate to say it, but we have to have lack of trust in people.
Well, you know, we're responsible for preserving our Maine. Megan, you said before that word luck, another term that, like you say, gets used. But I look at it in that, you know, this isn't just me. It's not just you. It's us. And so we have to safeguard and protect that thing that we're all experiencing. And it's our responsibility, right? Especially the leaders of our respective communities. It's ultimately lies on them to safeguard and protect the luck of the tribe. You know, if it's damaged, if it's hurt, then it hurts everybody. And then who's responsible for repairing that damage, restoring that honor, et cetera, et cetera. It's a big thing. I'm glad to be in a mindset to see that and to prove, you know, to continue in the path that I'm in with that in mind. It's not just about me here. I've got other people that mean something to me that I've tied weird with, that I've shared in ceremony and ritual and so many different things with. It's their luck on the line. It's our luck on the line, right? I've got to be protective of that by whatever means necessary.
Yeah.
You know? But I appreciate you, man. I think we really covered a lot of good basis of the idea or the thought of all thing, and I really appreciate you talking about a bit of your group's approach to things in general, right? Small things, having semi-regular thing held for the reasons that we stated earlier in the episode, and kind of separating that from the bigger regional all thing idea or model. And who knows what could come of this from just our discussion today. I think it sparked at least for me, you know, this mind fire to look at what conversations I've had with other people in our area about the idea of a thing, whether we call it all thing or whatever, and help us to kind of figure out where we want to go with this. It sounds like it's something that's needed, but it has to be done the right way. And it can't just be one person that's like, well, let's do it this way. There needs to be it needs to be done the right way, you know?
Yeah. And trust is a big deal. I think the right way starts with trust of the people all there. Do they have the trust in each other that they will act honorably and uphold the heathen virtues that we see in historical pre-Christian times?
Absolutely. I do appreciate it, Robert. Anything else that you wanted to say before we sign off? I'll connect with you a bit when we stop the recording, just to give you the expectation of what's to come on the publication of this episode. But while we're still here with the viewers and the listeners, is there anything else that you wanted to add as a sort of closing statement?
You know, I guess as my closing statement, first, thank you. I've really enjoyed this time. And while everyone knows Ald Sadhu is the "when were the bloats historically held" group, we believe that how heathens behave is so important. Just, I would encourage everyone, you know, let's just say you disagree with Ald Sadhu and Robert Sass on when Yule was historically, but you behave very honorably, then we've got common ground, because to me, that's just the most important thing. How we portray ourselves to the world, are we positively using our heathen values to positively impact our families and to take care of the sacred groves around us? To me, that, you know, I've always talked about accurate dates, things like that, but really how we behave is so important, and our reputation in the outside world, especially on social media today. I would just encourage everyone to remember, with everything we do, it reflects on who we are. So, you know, the recharge, Robert, this is the most important thing. And I hope you guys understand that and really embrace you know, focusing on being honorable heathens with how you behave. So thank you for listening. I'll get off the soapbox now. But online, we have too much heathens behaving poorly. Let's do better.
Do better. I want to, you know, mirror that, echo that. Yeah, we got to do better. And I appreciate you coming on here to say that and to share a bit of kind of some of the behind the scenes things that you did to the degree that you were able to and willing to. It's very insightful. I think it puts things in perspective for people. You know, when we collectively as look at stuff online, we it's a bit disassociative. You know, we're like, well, this person, you know, there's no, you know, how can I relate? You know, hearing things that happen with people like yourself, and it's relatable for a lot of folks. And I appreciate you saying what you said and sharing what you shared. So there's going to be information down in the for the Patreon viewers that are watching this episode. It's in the description below with all of Robert's stuff, altsidu.com, the Altsidu Saxon Heathenry group on Facebook, and the Germanic Heathenry Facebook page that is everything that Robert regularly shares. So be sure to check that out. And for all the listeners on the audio platforms, it's everything's going to be linked and annotated in the show notes. So do be sure to check it out, follow and support Robert and those efforts in any way that you can. And yeah, thank you very much, Robert, for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you. So,
yeah. And so for everybody else that's listening and watched this episode, thank you for your ongoing and continued support. Every way that you can support the podcast is also linked in the description and show notes. It's that Linktree link that you'll see there. So follow me on the socials. You can get merchandise, become a patron, wherever it is that you feel inspired and willing and wanting to do. It is greatly appreciated. So thank you all for your ongoing and continued support. Until we see each other again or talk to each other again, may the gods continue to notice you, and may your ancestors smile upon you. We'll see you in the next one.